Find her expert advice anytime at thinkblink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
Hey, good morning, everybody. It is 11:06. Welcome back to the Elise Klink Show. We are live every Sunday here on News Talk WSB, and I'm glad you could join me today. So much going on. Big week in real estate, as always. Our number, 404-872-0750. If you've got questions for me about money or real estate, or the intersection of the two, how the economy works, it's a wide open field today. 1-800-WSB-TALK. I hope you are signed up for our free weekly newsletter online, thinkglink.com. Go to the website, thinkglink.com. On any page, you can sign up for the free weekly newsletter, and I hope you will. You should also be following me on Twitter. I've already been tweeting this morning, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, and I've tweeted out the story that I want to talk about right now, which is about the new mortgage rules that were introduced by the CFPB. This is causing such a hubbub, I have to say. And it's really interesting to me why, because it doesn't actually change anything. So on Thursday, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, CFPB, which is kind of the new consumer watchdog agency, announced new rules aimed at making mortgages safer. Safer for you, safer for the banks, safer for the economy. Safe, right? There's a word that should never be used with the financial world. I don't think anything is really safe when we talk about safe things in finance. And all I'm saying about that is it's kind of like when you have a scam artist and you solve the problem that they have just caused, but they're already on to the next one. There will be some other way to make mortgages unsafe again for the economy, for you, and for the banks. But right now, the CFPB is working on making mortgages safer for us all. So that got me thinking back to where we were in 2003. Now, I've been doing this show for at least 13, 14 years. I can't even remember. I think this year is maybe we're in year 16. I don't know. Maybe we're ending year 15. A long time. I've been watching the real estate market for longer than I care to tell you, because it just makes everybody do the math. But back in 2003, 10 years ago, do you remember? The market, it was so hot. Properties in Atlanta were being snatched up minutes after being listed, and homebuyers were earning $50,000 a year were being approved for $500,000 mortgages. And we think about that kind of leverage today, and of course it's like, are you kidding me? Really? 10 times leverage? And yet it was going on all the time. I was answering questions about no-doc loans and stated-only income and interest-only mortgages and these kind of pay-as-you-go where you decide how much you want to pay and the opt-in. I had a good friend of mine who would come on the show, Dick LaPree, and he was a mortgage lender. He is a mortgage lender out in San Francisco. His company lends in, 20-something states. And we would talk about this, and he and I would just laugh. Like, who would do this? And yet it was being done all the time. On the other side, we had millions of borrowers who were actually getting loans and were being creative with their loans and their finances, and they were buying houses willy-nilly, and prices were rising like crazy, and realtors were so excited, and the home builders were excited, and we were selling record number of houses. It was the good old days, right? 10 years ago. And I got to tell you, when I talk to people in the real estate industry, they long for those days. Because we can talk about new home sales being up 15% from last year, which is nice, a really good clip. But where were we last year? At the worst year ever. Down 80-something percent from the high. A full real estate depression for home builders over the last 5 years. And we're not out of it yet. So those are the days that everybody's longing for. Buyers want to buy, and realtors want to sell to them, and mortgage lenders want to, lend to them, and home builders want to build for them. Everybody wants that. Anyway, that wasn't safe for the economy. And even though the vast majority of those borrowers, and I want to reassure everybody who's going to call in and go, well, but those are the people who, you know, went underwater. Those are the people who stopped paying their mortgages. No. The vast majority of people who bought, bought well in those years. What happened is that a few people, subprime people, who were the $50,000 a year people who bought the $500,000 a year properties, who were never going to be able to make those loans, and the lenders knew it, those people went off the edge. That didn't cause the major recession in our country. The recession, when hundreds of thousands of people were losing their jobs every month, that's what caused everybody else to stop paying their mortgages. I was on NPR on Friday, and I made that exact point. There was another reporter on. People forget that up until a couple of years ago, something like 98% of everybody made their mortgage payments on time. It's the recession, the deep, deep financial recession that killed it. And it wasn't because of the buyers. It wasn't. Anyway, so now the CFPB has stepped in to make us all safe from ourselves. And the new rules are causing people to get very upset. And yet I don't know why, because this is where we are. All it's doing is codifying exactly what's been going on in the mortgage market when all the lenders got way serious about what they were going to do. They kind of said, okay, we can see it's a bad idea to let people leverage up 10 times, even though we made a ton of money on those loans. So we're not going to do that anymore. So here are some simple rules that the CFPB has set forth in 801 pages of regulations, which you can read online if you are so inclined. Potential borrowers must supply financial information and lenders must verify it. That's been going on for a really long time, but now it's really officially got to go on. Here's another rule. To qualify for a loan, a consumer must have sufficient assets or income to repay the loan. In other words, you got to earn it to pay it, and we're going to check. It's not unreasonable. Here's another rule. Lenders will have to determine the borrower's ability to repay both the loan principal and interest over the long term and not just during the introductory period when the rate may be lower. That's what was going on that was so damaging. So when you had these opt-in mortgages, the lender would say, oh, Elise, you're qualified to pay back this $10 million loan at 1% interest. But that 1% interest was only going to be good for 3 to 5 years, and then it was going to go up to like 8%. And there would be no way I'd be qualified to repay a $10 million loan at 8%. Frankly, I don't think I could qualify to repay a $10 million loan at any percentage rate. But the point is, that's how they were cooking the books. That's how they were making those judgments. So now they can't. Now you actually have to look at the W-2 and the 1099s and the tax returns and all the other pay stubs or whatever it is to make sure that people are actually able to repay those mortgages. And that's been going on for the last 4 or 5 years. And the reason it's going on is because the government has been forcing lenders to buy back the bad loans, the ones they didn't check on. So when you see these $25 billion foreclosure settlements, what you may or may not realize is that lenders have been having to pay hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to buy back bad loans from the government or from whoever it is. And that's very painful for them. They don't like doing that. So they decided they're going to change their practices. They don't have to do that anymore. And that's what this is all about. So there are also a new category of loans called qualified mortgages, where lenders won't have to buy them back if they meet certain rules. And these are supposed to protect consumers from predatory actions by lenders. So 10 years ago, even longer, I was writing stories about how lenders were playing games, because on the federal level or on the state level, they would be prohibited from making predatory mortgages of like 17% or 10% or 12%. These are interest rates that now seem incredible. But back then, 10, 15%, if you couldn't get a loan any other way, wasn't horrible. I mean, it was horrible. It was terrible when everybody else was paying 6, 6.5%. But if you had no credit, this was the only way you could get a mortgage or a loan and you really wanted it, you could. But lenders would then say, no, I'm going to be federally chartered, so I don't have to live by the state regulations. So what you may not realize is that if you're a federally chartered lender, you have a separate group of rules that you have to adjust yourselves to than different states. And states are not all the same. Some are very tough on predatory lending, and some aren't. There are lots of ways to beat the loopholes. And so this now, this game will hopefully end because the government wants to protect, the federal government wants to protect consumers from predatory actions by lenders. And if they are, if the lenders pay attention to this, then there will be no call to buy back those loans if they go bad. You got to live by the rules, and then you don't have to die by the rules. Down payments. So you can you're not going to be able to get a loan with zero down anymore unless it's a VA. And those loans are USDA. Those loans are still out there. But everybody else is stepping it up. And I've been writing about real estate long enough to remember when a 20% cash down payment was the only way that you were going to be able to get a loan. Today, it's still better. You get the best deal with 20% or more down in cash. You will be able to buy a loan with 3.5% down with FHA or zero down with USDA if you qualify, or VA if you qualify. But the CFPB is watching. They don't really want those interest-only loans anymore, except in a very, very few cases. And they really don't want to see lenders taking advantage of consumers. And we'll just see if this works. We'll see if this works. I don't know if it will. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Taking your questions today. And I do just want to make one more point before we go to break, right? When the bad times hit, one of the problems that we had is that the cash cushion that lenders once demanded melted away. Do you remember back in 2003? If you had a pulse and a good credit score, you could basically qualify for a loan in an afternoon. People would walk into a lender's office and walk out a half an hour later with a $30,000 line of credit, for a home equity line of credit. Those days have gone by the wayside. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't think any of these rules are bad. I think over time we're going to see a push to make them a little more flexible as the economy continues to get better, as people understand a little bit more about borrowing. I just always think, and this is really what I want to get across, I think it's quite possible that our real estate market, both in Atlanta, Georgia, and in the United States, will recover more slowly because everyone actually has to earn enough income to afford their mortgage. I do, because it just means that fewer people right now, today, are going to be able to buy a home. And we still are working through a flood of foreclosures in many markets. We're still working through a flood of short sales. And then all the people who don't have to get out but are really, really disappointed at where their property value is, and they don't want to sell just now. And all of those homes are going to have to come on the market too. We still have a ways to go. But the good news here, and you can call it a silver lining if you want, is that homes in the U.S. are nearly as affordable as they've ever been based on income. The National Association of Realtors put out a report this week that said that affordability is at an all-time high. Mortgage interest rates, we know, are at an all-time low because week in and week out I talk about that. But the good thing is, if we actually have to be able to afford our homes and our mortgage payments, it's an amazing thing that they cost less than they used to. All right, we're going to get to your calls in just a few minutes. We've got Real Estate Insight coming up. 404-872-0750 is our number. We've got some lines open, a couple of people waiting. Bill, hang on. We're going to get to you in just a minute. I'm Elise Glenk. You're listening to AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB. Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glenk Show, live on Sundays here on News Talk WSB. We're going to get back to your questions in just a moment. And don't forget to follow me on Twitter. I'm at Glenk, at G-L-I-N-K. Time for Real Estate Insight with Rhonda Duffy. Rhonda, welcome back. I know you've been sick. You feeling better?
I am, and thanks for asking.
Good. So, reverse offers for sellers. Let's just dig in. It's a new year. We've got, I know you've got so much information. What do you mean by reverse offers?
Well, it's something that we started a couple years ago, and I think we're still the only people in Atlanta who have done it, and at least done it as successfully as we have. But This is a really good tip for a seller. So pay attention, everyone who's selling their house, because I know you're getting traffic right now. How are you getting traffic? We don't have much inventory. But when these buyers come, sometimes what you have to do is lure them to making an offer on your house. So when somebody sees a house for a second time, we will call the agent and get a scoop on what is going on, or maybe the buyer directly, on what the seller, or I'm sorry, what the buyer is thinking. So if they're thinking, well, you know, we would make an offer, but, like, you know, the heating and air downstairs, it's not up to par. We would need a new heating and air. We would need a fence. We'll say, okay, what about us being the seller making you guys an offer? And the agent's like, well, is that legal? And I'm like, of course it's legal. We'll make you an offer just to get the ball rolling, or maybe your people will like the offer and accept it. So then with the seller, we construct a plan based on their current sales price and covering the objections, and we write the offer to the buyer.
So that's kind of interesting, because you're negotiating against yourself.
Right. You're negotiating against what a buyer perceives that they can or cannot do. Most of the time, buyers, you know, everybody knows real estate's negotiable, but sometimes buyers get in their head, oh, they won't do that. So they don't ever make an offer, or they don't know if the seller will really play, or sometimes buyers have trouble pulling the trigger.
So interesting. So do you have a blog post? Did you write one today with all of kind of the tips and more, a little more detail about this?
Of course.
All right. So I want everybody to go to RhondaDuffy.com and take a look at this, because it's a really interesting idea. And it's very counterintuitive, but obviously, Rhonda, it works.
It does work. We've had great success with simply being proactive. And that's what every seller hires an agent to do.
All right. Thanks so much. Feel better. We will talk to you again next week. Rhonda Duffy sponsors Duffy Realty of Atlanta, sponsors Real Estate Insight each week. We'll talk to you again next week. Stay tuned. We're going to get back right now to your questions. Just after these messages, I'm Elise Link. You're listening to News Talk WSB. It's 11:36 as we wind our way up to the next half hour. 404-872-0750. You're listening to the Elise Klink Show. We are live on Sundays, 11 to 1, and glad you could be here with us today to talk about money and real estate and why it matters to you. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Twitter, folks, that's where it's all happening, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. I uploaded a new cover photo to my Twitter page, my About Elise Twitter page. So take a look and see if you can figure out where that is. And I will be entertaining the correct, I will let you know at the end of the show what the correct answer is. It is really one of the most beautiful places that I have ever seen. 404-872-0750. Let's go to the phones. Bill joins us on the line from Powder Springs. Hey, Bill, what's going on?
I'm sitting in the car with my wife. We both have a cold. I got you on speaker. Can you hear me?
I sure can. I hope you guys are feeling better. Everybody seems to be sick right now.
Yeah, this stuff is just hanging on forever, and you can't sleep at night, even if I sit up straight.
Oh.
Okay, my wife is flagging me. Okay, get to the point. She,
you know, listen to your wife. That's all I can say.
I have three properties. I refinanced them 2 years ago. I have some experience. I have a financial background, et cetera, et cetera. You know, she'll pull out these clippings in the paper, show me rates because I want to refinance. And for the life of me, I can never get the rate that's in the paper. And, you know, when I call the people and I call originators and I call brokers and I shop it, and, you know, they got to ask a couple of questions and all that stuff. And then when you ask for the rate you see in the paper, oh, well, that's kind of like a loss leader. That seems deceptive. I mean, I told my wife I can't get these rates. And she says, well, so-and-so got theirs, and on and on.
All right, so let's back up a little bit. Are the three properties that you own, are they rental properties?
No, they're not rental properties.
Okay, so they're homes that you own personally and use personally. So you have a primary residence, and then you have two other residences.
That's right.
Okay.
The ones in New England, oh, and you find out the ads in New England always add a quarter of a point for a discount, and in the South they don't.
Well, I actually think that, you know, and I don't know what rates specifically you're seeing, but know that the rates in the paper are set like 4 days in advance, so they could change. But I don't think that's what's going on here. I think you are getting a little bait and switch. So what I would do is I'd stop paying attention to what's in the paper, and I would start calling around. But I will say There's a couple of things that could be going on. First of all, you're going to get a different rate for your primary residence than your second and third homes.
Right.
You're
right.
Never going to get the best rate for your second and third home. That's the first thing.
Yeah, but I can't even get the best rate for the primary home.
Well, how much is the loan on the primary residence? Is it a jumbo?
No, it's not jumbo. And that's another thing. When you talk to these people, you got to have a certain sign language. You know, you got to talk their language.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Well, you got to hassle.
Well.
And anyway, so no, it's
so it's under 417. The loan, $417,000.
Right.
Okay. Now, do you have any equity in the property?
Yeah.
Okay, so then there's no reason, unless your credit score stinks, which I'm sure probably doesn't, or you have too much debt, or for some reason you just don't make enough income to pay for all of this, according to the new rules and regulations that we talked about, you should be getting a great rate. So what is the rate you're seeing, and what is the rate you're being offered?
The rate I see is 3 1/8, and the rates I always get quoted are like a quarter to 3/8 higher than the ones my wife gives me in the paper.
And what is the interest rate that you're at?
4 5/8.
Okay, well, there's no reason that you can't do better than 4 5/8. Have you thought about going to a 15-year?
No, I don't want that. I want the lower cash flow.
Okay, so then you should be able to get somewhere around 3.5, but mortgage interest rates this week popped up to about 3.45 plus your points.
Day long, but the ads my wife gives me with 40 different people are 3 1/8 or
right. But maybe okay, so it's true, but you may have to pay more points than that, right? You may get that interest rate, but you're going to actually pay more. I really can't say this strongly enough, Bill. You got to stop looking at the paper, and your wife has to stop looking at the paper, and you have to start calling a whole bunch of different kinds of lenders. So another thing to understand about the way lenders work is that sometimes they really don't want your business. They want other business. So you come in the door waving a piece of paper saying, I want this rate, which may or may not still be good because, again, that's sent to the paper 3, 4, 5 days, sometimes a week ahead of time. So that rate is already old by the time you see it.
So call that. In the financial business, I see FHA, VA market quotes, on computer screens.
Yeah.
They're not 3 days old, but I understand what you're saying. It could be that, but I can understand I see 3 1/8 and they quote me 3 1/4.
It's still a point below what you're paying.
Yeah, but you're looking in my pocket with that comment. I don't want you to look in my pocket. I know.
My job is to look at your pocket, Bill.
I know that I need 1% or more in order to make the refinancing doable.
Well, that may or may not be true. So the other thing that people are doing is they're trading off a quarter point of interest rate for out-of-pocket costs. But I'm telling you, I'm just telling you, and you're in the financial world, so you probably know this to be the case as well. We are almost at rock bottom. Unless the government is going to literally start paying you to take a mortgage, which I guess in any kind of world that could happen, but just with the margin that lenders put on these loans, we're at rock bottom, or we're very close to rock bottom. We're within a quarter point of rock bottom, and if you're in the financial world, that a quarter point is meaningless. It's really meaningless over the long run. It may be an extra $1,000 out of 30 years out of your pocket, but what you want to do is get into the 3% range, and then you want to lock in a 30-year loan at that? I'm okay with that because I simply understand that this is the end of these rates, whether it's now or next year or even early 2015. When the economy recovers, God willing, we are not going to see a recession like this for another 80 years. And so interest rates are not going to get here again for another 80 years. And in another 5 or 7 years, you're going to be like, well, mortgage interest rates are 7%. I'm 4 5/8. I feel good about it. Or I'm 3 1/2 to 3 3/4, and I feel good about it. So what do you really want to do here? Because you can call around. I would suggest you call around to a bunch of different kinds of lenders, and I think you probably will do better and get a better rate. But remember, when they're competing for your business, they're going to offer you the best rate of all, right?
Yeah, and I have called around. That's what I said at the beginning. But, I guess another point is I hear that there's sometimes a lot of junk fees in the and whatever, they pile on.
Sure, I've been writing about that for years.
Well, okay, but I ask for these disclosure things. I get them and I compare them. And then I go back and try to say, well, I'm like an attorney for less. Or this looks like a junk fee. I'd like you to take it out. Or, I mean, I know I sound a little bit like I'm, Well, I won't use the word, but I'm
I could think of a word, but I'm not going to use it either. The thing, you're being persnickety, but what you have to understand is you're not going to get the lenders to not make any profit whatsoever on these loans. I mean, look at what Wells Fargo announced this week. You know, they announced, like, huge amounts of profit, a lot of it based on the back of the mortgage lending part of their business, which, by the way, is shrinking. So lenders have to make money, too, and it's always been quite reasonable for a fee of about 1%, however they divide it up. Right? If it's a half a point out of pocket and then it's a whole bunch of junk fees, or it's 1% with no junk fees, it's the same money. So
I don't disagree. I want them to make a profit. I'm not trying
to.
But I don't want to. I feel like they game the consumer all the time, so that the consumer, as well as informed as you try to be, you can't figure out, okay, I want to make a profit, but I want to see where it is and tell me how much you're profiting.
Well, Bill, I think you're being really reasonable, but I will tell you that there are lenders and mortgage brokers out there that are better than the ones you seem to be finding. And so I call up the lender that I've been using for the last 7 refinances. I've sent a lot of people to him. He's in Chicago, so I can't send you to him. But the point is that, you know, when he tells me this is what it is, I know I'm getting the best deal, just about the best deal I can. And so you need to find the right people that you can put in as part of your team. And I talk about team building in real estate all the time. In fact, I've shot a webinar on it that's going to be released later this year, where it isn't just about, you know, I need this one thing today. It's who is in your team. And with 3 properties, even if you just use them all yourself, you should have a team of a realtor and, you know, mortgage broker and attorney and inspector and whoever else it is in that team that you can call and understand that they're going to be on your side all the time. Because what I'm hearing in this conversation is a lack of trust. You don't feel like you can trust anybody you call. And you've managed to get 3 properties. You're at 4 5/8. And there are good people in this business. And you just haven't had the fortune to run into them. So now you have to look for them. Your wife should stop, and I know you're on speaker, she should stop waving pieces of paper in your face. And the two of you should get together and make a concerted effort to call 5 or 10 lenders in the Atlanta area that you have had great recommendations from your friends and family and colleagues to, and you should start to develop a relationship with them, because that's how you're going to get the better rate. And then when rates go down, they're going to call you, and they're going to offer you a deal. And that's a much better position to be in than looking in the paper and trying to make a move. So that is my prescription for the remedy. If I could give you one for your cold, I would do that as well. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Enrique joins us on the line from Duluth. Hi, Enrique.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. What's going on today?
First, Dan, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question concerning the new rules for the lending.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think this would affect loans for land purchases, just simple land, which, you know, usually it's pretty tough to get a loan from a bank.
Yeah, you can't really get a loan for a lot, a vacant lot, or a land purchase, unless it's like some sort of commercial purpose to the land, in which case these rules are for, the best that I can understand, residential mortgages. They're not for commercial or investment property purchases.
Oh, okay.
So,
because, you know, I've heard of like loans like, you know, 3 years, you pay for 3 years, and then at the end you got to do like a balloon payment.
And there are going to be a few balloon loans left. There are going to be a few. But overall, it's really hard to get a loan for a lot these days, and I don't think that's changing. Now, if you want to buy it as an investment, you probably can get some financing for it as long as you can show what you're going to do with it. And I would imagine, because this is what the last time I looked into this, which was about 6 or 7 months ago, it was like, yeah, we'll do that, but we want a 30-40% down payment associated with it. So they want a lot of cash in these commercial deals that look like you're not doing anything with them.
Okay.
So I don't think this is going to affect anything that's going on right now with investment property. But, you know, we have a lot of lenders who listen to this show every week. And I'm sure if there's something else going on, somebody's going to call in or tweet me at @glink or send me an email, and I will certainly report it.
Okay, great.
All right.
Hey, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck with it. It's 49 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750, taking your calls about money and real estate and what the heck is going on with these new rules from the government. I wrote a story about this, two stories about this for Money Watch this week. The one that's on the MoneyWatch.com homepage is called New Mortgage Rules Are Step Forward for Housing Industry, and I do believe that's the case. I've also linked to it on my Twitter feed today, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. So if you follow me, the link is probably already there for me as well, or you can just go to my own individual page on Twitter, and you'll be able to see it very easily in case you're following like 10,000 people like I am. All right, 49 minutes past the hour, our number 404-872-0750. When we come back, we're going to take more of your calls. In the next hour, we're going to talk a little bit more about these super low mortgage interest rates. I'll give you my four rules for a home run refinance, which I think is something everybody wants these days. And then I'm going to tell you why I am not refinancing at this point. Because, well, I don't want to give it away. That's it for now. Stay tuned to AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on anytime at ClarkHoward.com at midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
Operator, put me back on the line.
It's 11:55. Thanks for joining me today on News Talk WSB, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. John joins us on the line from Johns Creek. So, John, should everybody have a house?
Well, I don't know. That's my question to you. I just was curious if you had a thought. You mentioned the go-go days of 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And as I recall those days, prominent politicians were saying that everyone had the right to own a house, and if you were a bank and you didn't loan and it happened to be a minority, Acorn showed up and protested you for being a bad bank because you weren't giving people a mortgage. And what has been curious to me is when the whole thing blew up, it's all been laid at the feet of the mortgage lenders, and at least to my way of thinking, there doesn't seem to be any recognition that the federal government, which is now going to solve the problem, you could say maybe it helped create, that they've been like scot-free in terms of establishing this environment where it was believed that everybody, one way or another, had to get into a house. And I just wondered if you had a thought on that.
I think that there is you have to go back a little bit, and we'll probably have to continue this conversation. It's in the next segment of the show. But you know, the theme of homeowners make good citizens has been around for a really long time. It's been around since after World War II. And if you want to lay something at the feet of the government, sure, go ahead and lay that at the feet of the government, that they felt like people who had a stake and were owners, the ownership society, as George Bush used to call it, rather than renters, made for better citizens, right? They tended to vote more. They were more involved in their neighborhood. They were more involved in building things. And I would also say to you that, again, up until this Great Recession, which I will tell you that I don't believe home buyers caused, 98% of everybody who bought a loan made their payments on time.
Yep.
And that's just a fact. Right. And then we had the recession and people lost their jobs, and people who look great on paper, who had great credit scores and jobs and were able to make those payments, suddenly couldn't. So subprime lending played a very small part in this, but it wasn't like this is why we all failed. This is why the government failed. This is why we went into the worst recession in 80 years. So to go back to your point, you know, I don't have a problem with people owning property. I think it's a really good long-term savings method. And I said so on a radio show this week where somebody's like, well, somebody said that this is the age of ownership is at an end and everybody's just going to be a renter. And I'm like, well, somebody has to own the property that people are renting, right? You can't just rent from, you know, nobody. So somebody is being an owner. And the question is, are people going to be able to own their own homes? And what is that going to mean going forward? And when you have mortgage interest rates at historic lows, 3.5% for a 30-year loan, and affordability at an all-time high, This is the time when people should make the commitment to living in a home, buying a home and living there for 15 or 20 years, because they will save up and regain so much of what they lost in terms of net worth. But should people who earn $50,000 get $500,000 mortgages? No way. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glenk. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB.
But not for myself.
It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glenk is on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
Welcome back to the Elise Glenk Show. We are live on Sundays, 11 to 1, here on News Talk WSB. So glad you could join me today. We are having a great conversation about the new rules from the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which is the new government agency in Washington designed to protect you from yourself and everybody else from themselves, and keeping with these new mortgage rules, all 801 pages of them. Keeping the world safe from mortgage lending, I suppose. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. We would like to talk to you. So what I would really like to do is have you give us a call, 404-872-0750, and let me know what's going on. 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, thinkglink.com. That's my website, folks. thinkglink.com. If you haven't signed up for our free weekly newsletter, you are missing out. The news this week is that we finished finally editing the very first segment of our webinar. It's going to be a 9-part webinar on investing in real estate. The first segment is done. I hope to have the other 8 segments done by the end of January, and then we're going to put it up so you can take a look at it. So that's very exciting. You also want to follow me on Twitter. We're having kind of a lively conversation right now on the question that I just asked, which was, should everyone be able to buy a house, and what role did or should the government play in that? And so that came from our last caller from the end of last hour. So I thought I would put it out on Twitter. I would love to see what your response is. We've already had some responses, so it's, which is a great conversation. So follow me on Twitter at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. All right, let's go back to the phones, 404-872. Well, before we get to the phones, let me just talk for a moment about mortgage interest rates. So mortgage interest rates popped up just a little bit this week. They had been sort of near the record low. And what's interesting about that is that when they popped up a little bit, they just went up to about 3.4% from about 3.2%. That was the low. So we're talking not even a quarter of a point difference. Over the long run, on a huge, you know, 30-year mortgage, you're talking about the difference of maybe $1,000. But I find that everybody's getting really stymied when they are deciding what to do. It's like, oh, mortgage interest rates popped up, I'm not going to go get a loan. Folks, hear me right now. There's never been, and there will never be, a better time to get a mortgage than this year, and maybe partly into next year. And whether you pay 3.4% or 3.2%, and you will pay some fees with that, this is an amazing time to get a mortgage. There will be a time down the line where you will say to yourself, wow, I wish I had gotten a loan and listened to Elise Glenk when it was 3.5% or even 3.34% or 3.35% or 3.75%. Anything under 4% is absolutely unreal. It's just unreal. And so when I hear people say, well, do you think it'll float down a little more? Yeah, maybe, but we're almost near the bottom. Lenders put a 2.75% to 3% margin on these loans. The government is making the money available at just over 0%. So if the government's at 0.25% and then a lender's going to tack on 2.75%, you were at 3% right then and there. Right? How could it get any lower? The government would have to lower its interest rate even more, which it really can't do, and somebody would have to take less in profit. That's not going to happen. So 3% for a 30-year fixed rate loan, 3.25%, you're talking about the very lowest that interest rates can be, and everything else is marginal, and you shouldn't wait. You should get up and make a move and do your refinance. And I was going to give you my four rules for a home run refinance. I'm going to do that right now. So listen up. Number one, yes, you want to lower the interest rate. All good things come from a lower interest rate. Number two, right? Number two, you want to lower your monthly payment. And there are some twists as to whether that'll actually work, because a lot of it depends on, number three, you want to shorten your loan term. Shorten your loan term, right? If you can shorten your loan term from 30 years to 20 years, or 30 years to 15 years, or 20 years to 10 years, all those years of payments that you save, that's where you find the big bucks. That's where you save the money. And the fourth thing, the fourth part, is to manage your closing costs. Manage what it is you're paying out for all of this. So if somebody says, yeah, I can do that for you for $10,000, your answer is, no, I don't think so. And you keep looking. When lenders come back to you with a number like that, what they are telling you is they don't want your business. And just from a business perspective, you don't want to be a customer with somebody who doesn't want you as a customer, because you're going to pay more and be less satisfied overall. It's just the number one rule of business. If I don't want you, I'm going to make it unpalatable and wildly profitable, and you're going to either pay that or you're going to move on. And if you move on, I'm happy either way. So, four rules of a home run refinance. You can do a really good refinance and only use three of those rules or two of those rules. But if you want a home run refinance, all four of those rules have to come into play. Right? Lower the interest rate, lower your monthly payment, shorten your loan term, that's the big key, and manage your closing costs. 404-872-0750, let's go back to the phones. Larry joins us on the line. Hey, Larry.
Hey.
What's going on?
I'm refinancing my house.
Okay, why are you refinancing?
Because my interest rate is like 5 point something, and I can get 3.59, 3.54 or 3.55.
Something point 3.5 something is great.
Okay. The one that I'm working with now is a big bank.
Mm-hmm.
And they want me to pay PMI.
Well, what? Okay, so.
Okay, the other two I'm working with say it's a Fannie Mae is holding the loan.
Fannie Mae?
Freddie Mac.
Freddie Mac, you've put the two together, so it's Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. Do you know the difference?
No.
Okay.
So I go back to the bank that I'm dealing with, and I got these other offers, and they tell me my loan is not, held by them.
Okay, well, you can find out very easily. You can go to either FannieMae.com or FreddieMac.com, and you can stick in your loan number, and it will tell you precisely who owns your loan or if they own your loan.
Okay.
That's the easy way to do it. And if you have other offers and your lender is not being a good guy, then move on. Because, again, if they give you a loan that you don't like, they're telling you that they don't want your business.
Okay.
Now, private mortgage insurance is charged when you have less than 20% in equity on the property. Do you have less than 20%?
Well, I had my house appraised on loan just to see what it was worth. Okay, it came back at 240.
Uh-huh. And what's your loan amount?
212, which...
Okay, so you don't have...
Right.
You don't have 20%, so private mortgage insurance is what you would be charged.
Yeah, unless they were talking about HARP, doing it through HARP, the other two.
Yeah.
And then, can I say the name of the bank?
I don't care. Go ahead.
Okay, Wells Fargo says, it has to be through Fannie Mae or Fannie Mac.
Well, Fannie Mae and I think you don't quite understand what they're telling you, Larry, because Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac don't do residential loans directly to consumers. They buy loans from banks. That's their business. So when they say that to you and you say that to me, it doesn't make sense to me. So I'm not sure what they're really telling you.
Well, not either. That's why I'm asking you.
But I don't understand your question. What is your question?
Okay. The question is, if the other two can do it without the PMI, why can't the big bank do it without the PMI?
Well, number one, the other lenders may be lying to you. And when you actually get into it with them, they're going to go, oh, we hadn't pulled an appraisal for the property, so we're seeing that you need to blah, 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 pay PMI. The second thing is that the big bank, Wells Fargo, may be saying to you, we have to do a brand new refinance for you. You don't qualify for HERP.
Yeah.
So those are, you know, the different things. And the problem, and you can go to makinghomeaffordable.gov and you can read the rules for HERP.
Okay.
And there's also a link on there to get you to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which will tell you who actually owns your loan. But it doesn't really matter. What matters is what are the total amount of costs that you're going to incur. And sometimes the lender is Freddie Mac is Wells Fargo your lender right now?
Yes.
So sometimes your own lender will
excuse me.
Who is your current lender?
Ocwen.
Oh, Ocwen. Yuck.
Yeah.
So Ocwen bought a lot of loans, and they have continued to. In fact, they just bought a whole bunch of Bank of America loans.
Mine was with Bank of America.
You were with Bank of America, and they just bought. They bought it. So they're they're not so good to deal with. They're trying to get better, but they're not. And they just bought like hundreds of millions of dollars worth of loans from Bank of America. So you may. I can't tell you why the other lenders are saying, yes, you can do HARP, and the other ones are saying no. I don't know. But I don't think there's a difference between whether Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac necessarily holds your loan. Maybe there is internally for your particular loan. There are some weird, quirky things going on. The fact that Ocwen has your loan tells me that there was something not quite right about it anyway when you bought it. So you're going to have to make a decision. I would try not to pay PMI so you could follow through with the other lenders and see if that's truly what you're getting. You can also call the helpline, 888-995-HOPE, and see if they can get Ocwen to do something for you so that you also don't have to pay the PMI and they just kind of lower your interest rate. And you can have you tried that yet?
No. What was that number again?
So that's the Homeowners Hope Hotline, 888-995-HOPE.
888-995-HOPE.
Yep. You can call them, and they will do a back channel with Ocwen to see if you are indeed qualified. Ocwen's the servicer for whoever owns your loan, and that can help you as well.
Yeah, the main purpose is just to lower the interest rate.
I understand, but you want to lower the interest rate, but you how many years into the loan are you?
Five.
Right. So if you lower the interest rate a point, but now you have a 30-year loan and you're repaying five more years of interest, long-term that doesn't help you. And the government has stepped in and said if we're refinancing, it has to be in your overall benefit.
Okay.
So there has to be some sort of understanding that whatever is going on is actually helping you. Excuse me. And I would say, Larry, that just based on this conversation, I don't think you really understand what the opportunity is and what it is you are able to do. And so what I'd like to see is that you actually ask some more questions and you have some different answers so that you do have a better understanding of what's going on. And then you should call me back and let me know what you decided to do. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find Elise Glink live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
25 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for joining me today. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at Glink, at GLINK. 404-872-0750 is our number. Mark joins us on the line from Stockbridge. Hey, Mark.
Hi.
Well, so you have two young sons who are college age. I would say that's older sons because my sons aren't in college yet. But Where are they in college?
Second and third year, respectively.
Very nice. And what are they up to?
Well, they're in the second, third year. They both have part-time jobs, but have not established any credit as of yet. But yet I was wondering if there's a way that they can take advantage of the low house pricing on the housing today. And I'm looking for them to get about a $20,000, $30,000 house while the market is still in its current state. Is there any way they can take advantage of this? And if not, how can they establish their credit quickly to a point where they could actually purchase such houses?
Well, how much money are they actually making in these part-time jobs?
Maybe $12,000, $13,000 a year.
Each of them?
Yes.
So have they saved anything out of that?
Yes, they're saving. They're averaging around $4,000 or $5,000in the bank as it stands right now each.
So buying a house is an interesting idea, and it's very separate from the idea of building credit. Are either of them 21 yet?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, they can buy a house. I'm not sure if they can get credit, though, fully without your participation. But if there are houses in their neighborhood where they're living for about $30,000, $35,000, and you can help them either by co-signing a loan or if you've got cash, being the bank, that's the way you want to go. Because you know they're going to live in the property. You know it's going to pay for itself like no time. And then they'll be able to leverage, when they move out of it, they'll be able to leverage the rental income to buy a different property. I would say if you're trying to give your sons a start, that's the way to go. That is really an amazing opportunity because they're paying for living expenses anyway. As for them paying on a mortgage, it's very hard to get a mortgage for $25,000. It's just really hard to come by. $50,000, yes, you can do it, but $25,000, really tough. And so if you're asking for that, I'm not sure that's a possibility. But there are ways they should, you know, as soon as they're able, they should get a credit card. They should start to establish real credit. Especially while they're in or when they just get out of college, to make sure that they get on the financial system. It's 28 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. Be back in a flash with more on News Talk WSB.
And in the middle of the night, I may watch you go. There'll be no value in the strength of walls that I've grown.
36 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. This is the Elise Glink Show on Sundays, News Talk WSB. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. So I just got an email that I think is sort of interesting that says, you never seem to blame the government for the bad loans, for the mandates that forced lenders to take risks to fulfill the liberal agenda of everyone having a home when we knew half of them couldn't pay their rent. All right, I'm going to just start at the top for this. First of all, it's not a liberal agenda. If you listen to George Bush, who the last time I checked was a Republican, it's all about the ownership society. But it goes back further than that, back until the mid-1940s, when people were coming home from the war, and the government, of which it was both parties, thought it was a good idea to give people an ability to own their own home. So for this idea that this is like a liberal idea that everybody should own their own home, it's actually a conservative idea, the way conservatives used to think, that people were able to take ownership of something and own a piece of the American dream. The fact that lenders years ago used to redline neighborhoods and not lend to a full chunk of the American population is what the government was trying to fix. Redlining was bad for this country. It was horrible, and it was unfair. And so the idea that somehow the government did something bad by trying to force lenders to treat everybody equally, regardless of the color of their skin or their religion or whether or not they were pregnant, is a good thing for this country. It's not just a liberal thing. And the idea that, yes, there are some people who should not have had loans, absolutely. But Wall Street rewarded it hugely. I mean, by hundreds of millions of dollars in profits. And the idea that, again, and I'm going to say this over and over again, that somehow half the people couldn't pay their rent and we were going to give them all loans. If you look at the numbers before this Great Recession, 98% of people paid their loans on time in full, right? 98%. So I don't know where we say half of the people couldn't pay their rent. It's just ridiculous. It's not true. And it's certainly not been my experience over the last 20-odd years covering real estate. So the fact that we make lending available to all in this country who can afford it is a great thing for America. It's what makes America great. This ability that no matter what color your skin or your religion or anything else, that you can get a loan just like anybody else if you've got the income to afford it. So bad loans on the government, the intent was a good one, and it worked for a really long period of time. And when everything falls apart, everybody goes, oh, it's the government, it's the liberals. But it's not. Both parties wanted more homeowners. You know why? Because they vote. And everybody wants to be voted back in. That's why there's so much emphasis on redistricting. Everybody wants the people who vote their way to be in their district. And so you get wacky lines all over the place, and that's how that works. Government likes homeowners. They make for stronger neighborhoods. They vote. They do all the rest. So the idea that this is some sort of liberal thing, liberal subplot going on, is just ridiculous, and I don't agree with it. And it's not government who makes loans, by the way. Yes, they pushed lenders to get out of their red line districts, and they pushed lenders to figure out a way to make loans more available. Did the lenders go too far? Did the government go a little bit too far? Maybe. But that's not why we had a massive housing crisis. All right. Back to the phones. 404-872-0750. I'm trying to think of where we were at the time. I think Missy's been waiting the longest. Missy, welcome to the program.
Good morning. How are you?
A little uptight at the moment, I have to say. What can I do for you right now?
I'm sorry to hear that. All right. Hopefully mine will, I know my question will be a tough one for you.
All right.
But I have a second property out of state. It's currently, we have a 6.2 30-year fixed mortgage. We're 4 years into that mortgage with about $96,000 left. This home was originally not purchased for an investment purpose. It was for a family member who passed.
Mm-hmm.
So right now we're renting it to renters who are just paying what the mortgage monthly mortgage is for each month. So I'm kind of on the fence as to whether I should try and sell it. I know I might have to probably take a loss or spend the money to refinance it at a lower interest rate.
So tell me again what the interest rate is.
6.2. 30-year fixed.
Yeah, you probably can do a little better than that, but it is an investment property now. It is rented out.
Correct.
Family members don't live there.
Just what my monthly. I'm basically breaking even. I'm not losing money, but on the same side, I'm not making any money.
No, I got that. I got that. What is the goal long-term for this property? Do you feel like being an investment property owner? Do you want to be a landlord or not?
I think I would like to be a landlord if I was making something on the property.
What is something?
More than zero.
Okay. Missy, I'm going to give you $5 a month. Do you want to be a landlord?
No, I think a little bit more than that.
$50 a month.
Maybe $100.
$100 a month and you want to be a landlord.
Right.
Okay. So what's interesting about that is that you've got a price. You already know you want to do this if you can get your price.
Right.
But there's more to investment property than just simply having the monthly mortgage come in. There's other costs, right? The tenant moves out, you're going to have to repaint. You're going to have to maybe fix up. You'll have to start replacing appliances. And honestly, $100 a month isn't going to cover it unless that's $100 a month over all these other expenses.
Right.
So the first thing you have to understand is, can you get a different tenant who's going to pay you more money? And if you refinance down to, let's say, 4.5%, 5%, which is probably the best you'll do for an investment property, right?
Okay, right.
4.5% to 5%. Will that savings, what are you going to have to pay to get that? Because you're going to have to pay a little more for an investment property.
Correct.
And is that going to be enough over the long run to make this worthwhile. Mm-hmm. So you need to understand, again, what people are paying for a property like the one that you're renting out, and then decide if you really feel like making this work out of state. Now, one possibility is the tenants who are there say, you know what, we'd like to buy this house from you someday.
Mm-hmm.
And letting it go. Huh?
I would love that if they were able to do it. I don't think that their credit is up to par where they can do that, but they've been wonderful renters. I've really been blessed. They've always paid on time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to scare them away and, you know, raise the rent too much. But
How long have they been in there?
1 year.
So it's appropriate to raise it a little.
Okay.
And that's not a bad thing. And I think you should just open up a conversation with them and say, you know what, we do need to raise the rent a little bit. We'd like to keep you as a tenant. Do you have any interest over the next couple of years of buying this property? And see what they say. Because I think that sometimes landlords don't talk enough to their tenants. There's this idea that there's a Chinese wall separating you, and really, ideally, you want to have some, especially for an out-of-state property, you need to have communication. You're not there to see every day what they're doing to the property.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to feel like you've got some trust and that, you know, they're taking good care of it and they're paying on time, which is great. But you want to understand their intentions. Because what if they say to you, oh, 2 months from now we're moving out? Well, you've got to take a whole different tact.
Right.
You're going to have to figure out what to do.
Right.
So I think you need some more conversations with them, and you need to have an understanding of what you really want to do yourself with this property long run. And by long run, I mean over the next 5 to 10 years.
5 to 10. Okay. So if I did decide to refinance, because I'm fairly certain they do want to continue to rent, I would really need to hold on to my property about how many years to recoup those closing costs.
Well, of course, it depends exactly what they're going to charge you, right? So if you're making nothing and you're going to get charged $4,000, you're not going to make that back, right?
Right, right.
Unless it's the savings on it is, so if it's just on a mortgage basis, so now you've refinanced, it's $4,000 to refinance, and you're going to save $50 a month, $100 a month, so that's $1,200 a year, so it's going to take you 4 years to pay that off.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. I hope it works out for you, Missy.
Thank you, you too.
Okay. 46 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Karen joins us on the line. Hey, Karen.
Hi. Hi, Elise. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's going on today?
I'm a first-time home buyer, and I've been in my home for about 10 years. I have a 30-year fixed FHA home.
You have a 30-year FHA?
A 30-year fixed FHA home.
Okay. Got it.
And
what's the interest rate on that?
7%.
7%?
Yeah.
Why is it so high?
Well, I was at home. Can I name the mortgage?
It doesn't matter. Go ahead.
I was at home bank, and then they sold the mortgage to Bank of America.
Uh-huh. But why was your loan so high 2 years ago when interest rates were really low? Did you have bad credit?
No, I never refinanced.
You said you've had your loan for 2 years.
No, I've been in my home 10 years.
I
bought my home in 2002.
Got it. Okay, so now that makes more sense. And you never refinanced?
No.
Okay. Are you going to refinance now?
Well, that's what I was calling you. I wanted to know, what's the best route to go refinance? Does that mean you're starting all over with your mortgage? Or
no.
Should I go with the current lender? Or do I go with
Okay, first of all, Karen, I got to tell you, if you had refinanced, like, you've lost so much money by not refinancing over the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to pay attention to what you're doing. But here's what I want you to do now. Call Bank of America and tell them you have an FHA loan and you want a streamlined refinance.
Okay.
FHA, you can find information about it on their website. But what you're basically going to do is just drop the interest rate. It should cost you a couple of $100. Streamline FHA refinance. They shouldn't pull an appraisal. They shouldn't have to pull any income verification. It's just a simple program. Bank of America has this program, and you should ask them to just do a streamline refinance. And your interest rate should drop from 7% to around 4%.
Okay.
If you want to do a total refinance, Then what you're going to want to do, hopefully you have 20% equity in the property. I don't know if that's true. You're going to have to think about that and look at what's going on in the neighborhood. But if you have 20% equity in the property, you could refinance for a 15 or 20-year loan, right? Because basically that's all you have left is 20 years or even less, 19 years on your loan.
Mm-hmm.
And then you ought to be able to get an interest rate of somewhere around 3%, 3 to 3.25% for a 15-year loan. Half of what you're paying, and it's going to be even less than that because you've got a lower loan balance. You're going to have to pay out of pocket a little bit for that, but you should try to trade off interest rate for it. And then you should not be making any more money. You'll probably pay even less than you're paying every month, and then you're going to pay off the loan in 15 years. So it may be very worthwhile for you to try and do a total refinance to 15 years rather than a streamline to, you know, just for the amount of years you have left. And you're going to have to go and investigate both of those so that you really understand what it is you're doing and where you're going to save the most money. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
You have these two choices, and I'm guessing that the 15-year total refinance is going to be a better deal for you, but you're going to have to figure that out and see what you're offered and then shop it around.
Okay, should I stay with the current lender or can I go with a credit union?
You can go with anybody who will give you the very best deal.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, let me know what you decide to do, okay?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck. 49 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750 is our number. Don't forget to tweet me your thoughts. I put up that new picture on Twitter. Let me know if you know where it is, and I'm going to tell you at the end of the show, which is coming right up. I'm Elise Klink. Stay tuned. Be back with more at News Talk WSB.
We were cold as the blood through your bones and the light.
12:55 on News Talk WSB. The championship to be game starts in another 5 minutes. Very exciting. Good luck, Falcons. 404-872-0750 is our number. Let's see if we can fit in one more call before the top of the hour. Andrea joins us on the line. Hey, Andrea, welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call, Elise.
Sure.
I'm calling because I have a problem. My mother owns a house in Ohio, and the house was built in 1847. And I have an older brother who started squatting in there a couple of years ago, and we had him evicted in 2011.
That must have been a very challenging thing for your family.
Yes, especially me because I was the one that had to go to court.
Oh, so sorry.
He was evicted 2 weeks later. He goes and puts the house is only worth $50,000, but it's sitting on a couple of lots, so, you know, the land is worth something, too. But 2 weeks later, he went and put a $600,000 mechanics lien on the house and filed it in the county recorder's office. So I called to see how I could get the mechanics lien removed because my mother wants to sell the house. My mother's 77 years old. And she wants to sell the house and use some of that money to live off now.
Sure.
She's a retired teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, there's no realtor that will take the house and put it on the market because of the mechanics lien on the house. And I'm wondering, what is something that I can do to get the mechanics lien removed from the house and get him out of the house because he's moved back in the house. He had the locks changed. Had utilities put back on, and he's squatting there once again.
You're going to have to hire a local attorney in Ohio, and you're going to have to kick him out again and change the locks. And the attorney is going to have to has to do something called perfecting the lien to really prove that it's owed. He can't prove that because he hasn't done anything to the property, and you didn't pay him for anything, and you didn't agree to pay him for anything. So you can have him arrested for trespassing.
We've already called the police, and the police, because we're not there in Ohio, they said, well, we knock on the door and try to get him to come to the door, but he won't come to the door, he won't answer the door.
Mm-hmm.
So they said we can't bust the door down and get him out of there.
Okay.
I tried calling the utility company to have the water and the electricity turned off, and they say they can't do anything there in Dayton because they said someone's in there and they're paying the bills on time.
Okay. You need to hire a real estate attorney.
Okay.
Who can help you. And if this is in Dayton, you want to call the Dayton Bar Association.
Okay.
Ask for the head of the real estate committee. Find out who that is. Call that person. Tell them what is going on and say that you need a referral to the type of attorney who can really help out and make a difference here.
Okay.
And that's what you have to do. And unfortunately, you know, I hate to go the legal route, but you're going to have to do that. You're going to have to evict him, and maybe once he walks out of the door, the police can step in and they can arrest him for trespassing. But you're going to, this is a nightmare. I hate when these things happen because it's family. And when you have family, it just is so much more complicated than if it were a stranger. And it's so hard for your mom and so hard for you. And I'm really sorry about that. But take these steps and then call back and let me know what's going on. And we'll see if we can give you some more help, all right? 59 minutes past the hour. Our time is up, unfortunately. But join me again next week. We'll be here for another 2 hours of really great real estate information. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned online at thinklink.com. And have a great week, everybody.